You're watching Badass Lady Folk. I'm your host, Christine Stoddard. And this episode, I'm thrilled to introduce Queerly Fantastic. Hey, Queerly.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Of course.
Thanks for being fabulous.
You know, just a little casual.
Yeah. So we briefly met at Miss Subways and you won. You took the crown. And you, could you just describe for viewers what your fantastic act was?
Yeah, so I was representing the A train and had my best friend and my partner represent the C and the E lines, respectively, you know, because obviously a queen has to have her entourage. And, you know, I chose the A line because I have grew up on the A line. I've lived there most of my life, either down in Brooklyn, even when I moved uptown, I was still on the A train. And so I wanted to do something that talked about the relationship between uptown and downtown. And so my act was to the song, Take the A Train, the classic jazz standard. And so I sung the song at the top of the act. And then I danced to a sort of jazzier cover of the song by Sarah Vaughan and did what's called a sing and fling. So that's when you sing and take off your clothes.
sing and fling. I had never heard that before. I love it.
And yeah, it was really fun. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to incorporate the things that visually tell us a train to my costume. And so, you know, I obviously wanted to use that iconic blue, and I got that dress and this dress that I'm wearing from a friend of mine, Gigi Holiday, who's another burlesque performer. And then, you know, I rhinestone the dress, I put a bunch of fringe on it, but the thing that everyone keeps telling me about that they remember is I have these pasties, and pasties are what you put on your boobs to cover your nipples because we live in a politicized country. And they just have the, like, iconic font of the A. And I was like, this is what I want. I want people to, like, know that it's the A train. I also purchased a bunch of model trains. And they're, like, you can see them on different parts of the costume. My boa has A trains hanging off of them. There is an A train on my head as a headpiece.
It was very intricate.
Yeah.
I remember, so detail-oriented.
I just spent a lot of time being like, how many, like, Easter eggs can I build into the act? And then what I ended up doing was saying, oh, what if I, at the end, am the train, right? So it started out with, like, earrings that are LED reactive, and then I had shoes that are, like, movement reactive, and then at the end, I take off the A train pasties, and there's a pasty reveal underneath, which are light and sound reactive pasties. So the pasties themselves light up, and I became the sort of headlights of the train coming down the platform, coming down the tunnel, and it was really fun to just like see how many times I could like push the motif of being the train.
I definitely remember the lights too. That was the other aspect. I was like, she lit up.
Yeah. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out like how to do it. And then I found a burlesque performer who has a company that builds LED like earrings and pasties. And I was like, oh, I don't have to build it myself. I can just outsource it. Yes.
Well, you're already doing enough, right?
Exactly. It takes a long time to rhinestone a whole ball gown.
Oh my God. And you make so many different kinds of costumes, but especially nerdlesque sort of like comic book characters, pop culture.
Yes.
So can you talk about how you got into this world and why you do it?
Yeah. So I actually started out as a cosplayer back in, I want to say 2013. You know, I come from a long line of nerds. My grandfather and my dad and my mom are all Trekkies. I have just been in a like nerd household my whole life, and therefore like have been a part of fandom even tangentially since I was really young. And so when I found out like, oh, there's like conventions and like places I could go to like spend time with other people who I had met on the internet in real life, I was very excited about that.
Weren't you on a panel at Comic-Con?
Yes, I've been on several panels at Comic-Con.
Wow.
And FlameCon and, like, lots of different conventions across the country. But, yeah, I started just making costumes out of stuff. I do a lot of what's called closet cosplay. So I'll, like, go to the thrift store or go to, like, an estate store sale or, like, things where it's just, like, clothing. And then I'll buy the stuff and, like, edit it into what I want it to be.
Yeah, because it sounds like it could be a very expensive,
so expensive
hobby, right?
Very, very expensive. Like, cosplay is very expensive. And then I started learning how to make props for things that I either couldn't afford or just people didn't make them at that. Like, cosplay wasn't as mainstream as it is now 10 years ago.
Why do you think that is? Just the internet?
I think the internet.
Yeah.
I also think, like, how it is that we talk about cosplay has shifted. You know, it was, like, communities on Tumblr that would meet up and go to a convention, and now it's, like, things that people talk about on television or radio. It's a way that people have become influencers and a way that people can make money. And so that has really affected how the cosplay community sort of interacts with each other and interacts with folks in the real world, quote unquote. So I have all of these costumes, and I was pole dancing and doing some other things, and I'd gotten a gig kittening. So kittening is the role of a kitten is to sort of pick up all the things that all the burlesque performers throw all over the place. And they usually are helping with, like, stage management and getting people on and off the stage on time, pre-setting props,
unbreaking down. It is the cutest job title.
And the kittens are working hard. And if you aren't paying your kittens, you should.
There are people who don't pay them?
That's a whole...
What?
There are people who don't pay their kittens. There are people who pay their kittens significantly less than their cast, even though the kitten has the most stage time.
Yeah.
It's wild. It's like a wild thing.
A lot of inequity.
Yes. So I had signed up to be a kitten for a show, right? I had never done a burlesque performance before. I had seen burlesque, right? I had seen Pearl Noir. I had seen, who else? I'm trying to think of, like, people before I really knew what burlesque was. So I'd seen Miss Aurora Borealis up in the Bronx. I'd seen Miss Poison Ivory, and I was like, wow. But the person who was running the event was like, hey, someone got sick. Can you step in? We know you know, you do other types of performance. Could you step in and do an act? And I was like, it was like 2 weeks before, and I was like, yeah? And so I looked around to be like, what do I have at home? And
Wait, so were you... nervous, terrified?
Oh, I was absolutely
like, what?
Okay. Terrified. I was like, I can do it. And then I was like, ah.
But with that sense of confidence, too, right?
Delusion? I don't, one of those.
But you did.
Probably a mix of both. So I looked around and I was like, what do I have at home? I had lots of costumes. I still have a lot of costumes. And so I chose something that would be, I thought, simple, right? So I'm going to say this and then I'm going to laugh about it. I was like, oh, I'll do a reverse strip. So most burlesque acts are someone who's taking off their clothing.
Right, yeah.
A reverse strip is you getting dressed. And so reverse strips are actually very difficult.
Yeah.
Because we associate sexy or sensuality with taking off a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But putting on your clothing in a way that's sensual is actually hard.
Yeah.
It's not something we have a lot of practice with. And I chose to do a Wonder Woman act. And so I was putting on the base.
Oh, wow.
Like the Wonder Woman, like, bodysuit and all the armor and the shoes. And it was like a many piece adventure.
How did you get that wiggle to look sexy?
I don't know because there's no video.
Thank God.
There are pictures. But I was like, yeah, this is a good idea because the costume wasn't built to be taken off. It was built to be put on and to be sturdy, right? Because I built it to walk around convention floors all day long. So it was like pins and Velcro. and like all kinds of things. And so I like practiced putting on this costume and I did the act, and I actually made it through all, I made it through all the pieces, all the armor. The only thing I didn't put on was my shoes. And I feel pretty good about that. Like now I'm like, oh, I'm trying to imagine myself trying to put on 6-inch heels on stage.
Wait, so you didn't put them on because the song ended?
Yeah, the song ended.
So you ran out of time.
Like, all right, that's enough.
Okay, got it.
I was like, oh no. And then, but like that night I met Stella Nova and like a bunch of other performers, mm-hmm. and I was like, and watched them like do burlesque in a way that I was really excited about.
How specifically?
I think it was specifically the idea that people were doing burlesque that said something, yeah. right? So like my act was about like a Black woman waking up in the morning and being tired, mm. but having to suit up and go be Wonder Woman anyway, mm. right? Like that was the act. And so there were all of these messages inside of people's burlesque act. And I was like, oh, it's not just, ooh, sexy, right? It's sexy and, it's sexy mm-hmm. plus. And that was really appealing to me. And it wasn't something that I had thought about before as a way of saying things that I felt like needed to be said. And so I was really, that moment like shifted how I was, because I thought my act was, I wasn't sure if people were going to get it, you know? But I looked at all the other acts and I said, okay, yeah. People are making these kinds of statements. They are thinking about these kinds of things, and they're using those ideas inside of burlesque.
Why was it important for you to do something that went beyond plain entertainment?
I think A, because of the organization that I was working with at the time, it was Glitz. And B, because there is something inherently political about my presence on a stage yeah. as a Black queer femme. Right. And there are so many stages where people are not looking for me. Right. They don't expect me to be there. They don't want me to be there. And so it was important to me to see that lots of other folks are also saying my presence here is political and you're going to have to reckon with me and the way I think about the world and why I do what I do while I am entertaining you. Mm-hmm. And that felt really important and still feels really important to like, all my entire concept of what it means to be an entertainer.
So do you find yourself, I feel silly asking the question, but I want to hear it. Yeah. Do you find yourself frustrated right in a lot of spaces where even ones that proclaim to be progressive, mm-hmm. proclaim to be mm-hmm. liberal, proclaim to be open-minded and accepting, still might not actually want
yeah,
you there.
I'm the first Black, several of my titles. And so, you know, I think it's inherent, like I said, like my presence in the space is inherently mm-hmm. political, right? And so I think that it's important to remind folks that, yes, you know, I think it's funny to quote Martin Luther King, but I'm gonna do it like, there is danger, the danger in our current movement and in the movement for the last, you know, 75 years has been the white liberal mm-hmm. Who feels like, well, I have learned it all, I've done it all, I know better. And they stop learning, they stop listening, right? And I'm like, no, you don't know better. You know better than you did, but you, mm-hmm. you know, thinking about inclusion, thinking about equity, thinking about access is not a place that you arrive. It is a pathway that you continue on, right? So in my like daytime life, I do diversity, equity, and inclusion work. And this is a conversation
what
I have
What a fun to... time for that.
The reason that I am a full-time burlesque performer is because I was fired from my last full-time DEI role 2 years ago. This is not new, right? We're just seeing it on a national platform. Mm-hmm. But what it is that has been happening inside of this industry is after 2020, when folks had to reckon, right? There was no hiding from it, right? So people did a lot of this performative, like, we're listening and learning, black squares and this and that and the third and the other thing. But, you know, I did a very unscientific poll where I just asked black performers across the country.
On social media?
On social media, okay. Via email, right? Because I, like, talked to a lot of different people in a lot of different places. And I said, do you have a booking in February for Black History Month? Like, specifically for a Black History Month show. Do you have a booking in February for any show? Are you not booked at all in February in your city or being asked to travel someplace else? Or are you a person who was like, I don't see this happening in my city. I'm going to produce a show myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so many performers, so many black performers across the country are saying, I was not contacted for any Black History Month shows, so I just took the booking that was offered to me, which was a Valentine's Day show or something else,
yeah.
Right? Or I had a Valentine's Day show that I asked, can this be a Black History Month show? And somebody said no. Or I had a Black History Month show booked and the venue canceled it and put something else that has nothing to do with Black History Month in its place and is now doing no Black History Month programming. Right? So this is not, I was like, am I making this up? Is it in my head? No. Like, I'm talking about hundreds of performers around the country are confirming that this is not new, but it's gotten egregious this year. Right? So yes, the federal government is like, we're not celebrating Black History Month. But also, now that there is not a push for that to happen, regular people are like, well, if they're not doing it, I don't have to do it either. Right?
So do you just constantly find yourself in this position of deciding, am I going to educate someone?
Yes.
Am I going to... well, because some people, you know, and this is why sometimes I get a little shy about asking these questions. Some people say, like, well, it's, I'm tired. I don't want to educate anymore. I want to use my energy for other things. Mm-hmm. It's my way to have some form of self-care, right?
Yeah.
To not constantly get on this platform and teach a lesson.
Yeah.
But how do you, as a performer, as somebody who is in public spaces quite often, how do you find ways to educate while still respecting your own need for self-care?
Right. It's about discernment, right? So, like, I think it's important for me to talk about things that I feel important on platforms where people have to engage, right? So I could spend a lot of time yelling in my Instagram stories, and sometimes I do because I'm annoyed about it. But often it's when I am on stage at receiving a golden pasty at the New York Burlesque Festival, right? Like, or like places where there's a captive audience and people have to listen. That's where I'm like, all right, I'm saving my energy for that, because it means that if I say that thing after I get off the stage, there are going to be very specific kinds of conversations happening, and I need to have energy for that, you know? And it also means deciding when I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to have this conversation right now, but that's a performer or producer or venue that I don't want to work with anymore, right? If that's how you feel, okay. But I'm not going to help you make money.
Because money is power.
Listen,
right?
In this country, people understand two languages, money and violence, right? And, like, we're not at the violence stage yet. but we are at the money stage, right? And I'm like, you know what? If that is how you feel, now I know, right? Because people really say wild things backstage. And I will make sure that I am not going to engage with you anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell other black performers, hey, this person is not safe. This venue is not safe.
Yeah.
You may actively experience harm here. Be careful, right? And they get to make their own decision as to how it is they engage with that person or that venue.
So what do you want people to take away from your performances? And what sort of statements do you want to make? What sort of joy and humor do you want to bring?
I was talking about this with Pearl Noir, actually. I built a project called We've Been Here with the help of Pepa Tiang, which is a really amazing organization that grants funds and space and mentorship and lots of other things to emerging artists. And the project allowed me to bring on Pearl Noir as a mentor for myself and other burlesque performers. And we took the first burlesque performance that we ever did, so that Wonder Woman act I was just telling you about, and built a brand new performance that more accurately represents the artists that we are now with the help of Pearl. And so something that I said was, well, I want my audience to, and she was like, hold on, you can't make your audience feel anything. You can't make them do anything, right? You can't control their experience, right? What you can do is offer things. And it shifted my understanding of what I'm doing on the stage, right? And so, like, very specifically, I only perform to Black artists only, right? I very specifically make time to talk to Black costume designers and look at the aesthetics of Black showgirls throughout the ages and bring those things, incorporate those things into my movement style, into the costuming that I'm wearing, into my hair. You know, I for a long time wore wigs and I loved the versatility that wigs gave me and I loved not having to do my hair. And then someone said to me, you know, I like didn't wear a wig once after the pandemic. My hair has gotten very long and it's a hassle to put it up under a wig. And so I took my wig off in the middle of performance because it was coming off and I was like, ugh, whatever. And someone was like, it was so powerful to see you say no to one aesthetic and embrace like the hair that grows out of your head. And I was like, oh.
And that was something that was improvised.
Right. It was literally because I was like, ugh, if I don't take this wig off, it's going to come off in a time that I don't want it to. So let me make it look like it's on purpose.
Right.
And it is now a thing that I incorporate into this act. Right. And it like really shifted how I thought about what I do when I do it and how I use my physical body to make a statement, right, on stage, right? And so it doesn't matter if I am intentionally being political, right? I very rarely build an act to intentionally be political.
Martin Luther King Day act.
No, I'm not doing that. That is not, I just do so much of that.
Right.
In, you know, I'm just like, ugh, right? But my Black body on the stage with my natural hair, with this face, is inherently making a statement that says, I belong here, right? I was invited here. You paid your almighty American dollars to see me, right? Mm-hmm. And sometimes people get weird. I've been in so many venues where, like, I come out and people who were very attentive to performers before or after me are suddenly like, eh, and trying not to care, right? And I get to make a choice there.
Yeah.
Right? I'm like, I can pay attention to, especially in New York City, we have a lot of floor shows. So a floor show is, there's no stage, I'm out amongst the people.
Yeah.
And I get to make a choice. I'm like, do I focus my energy on the person who's not paying attention to me? Or do I go have fun with the people who are excited about me? And, you know, depending on my energy levels, I make that choice, right?
So what makes a good audience member at a burlesque show?
Ooh, okay. First of all, money.
Okay.
Tip the performers. Tip the host. Tip the kitten. Tip the bar staff. Tip the bar back. Tip the security guard. Tip everybody, okay? Because everybody's working really hard to bring you an experience, right? Like a burlesque show is not just like a show, right? It's a whole experience. It's an environment, right? So tip everybody. That is the first thing that makes a good performer. The second thing is pay attention, right? Like if you're going to come and be on your phone, record the performance, right? Like put it on your Instagram, tag, you know, if you know the performers, Instagram, tag them, right? If you don't, ask them later, right? Send the footage to them. We love seeing ourselves. We're all just like sparkly Tinkerbells. If you don't tell us we're doing a good job, we'll just fade away and die. And also, like, tell us in the moment that you are having a good time, right? Hoot and holler if that's what your spirit, like, draws you to. And if you're just so mesmerized that you can't make a sound, like, just be there and, like, be in it and just absorb it with your eyeballs, you know? But, like, that show you're seeing is never going to happen again.
Yeah.
Right? That's the thing about live entertainment, right? Even the most choreographed burlesque performance is going to have variations over time, right? The corset didn't come off on the beat, or the glove, like, whipped somebody in the face or whatever, right? It's always different, and that's what makes it exciting. So you're getting a show that will never happen again. So be there and be excited about it.
And what makes a bad audience member?
Please don't just sit there and talk to your whomever. Like, talk to your friend. I went to a burlesque show in New Orleans. It was wild because it was a bunch of people from New York in the audience. And there was a couple sitting in front of us. So I'm sitting at a table full of performers, like some of the most awarded performers that I know. And we're sitting there and we're watching this couple. And this guy just, like, is talking through the whole performance.
Stay home.
And it was, his partner was very much, like, trying to, you know, this person was tipping. They were, like, trying to be engaged. But this man just kept talking. And it was just wild to me. And then I'm like, here we are in New Orleans watching some of the most spectacular burlesque I've ever seen. It was all long form burlesque.
Wow.
Right? So 7 minutes or longer. Right? And this man is talking? Oh my gosh. It was really wild. And each performer dealt with that differently.
Yeah.
Which was fun for me personally. As a person who was, like, just in the audience watching. But yeah, just, like, be there.
Yeah.
Be there and be present and, like, show your appreciation for folks who, yes, you're looking at maybe a 5 to 7 minute act, but what you don't see is the years of movement training, the years of makeup training and hair training and, like, stretching backstage, and how long did that costume take for the person who made it, right? Maybe it was the performer, maybe they commissioned it, right? Rhinestoning is a marathon, not a sprint.
Well, thank you so much for being present here, Queerly.
Thank
I really
you.
Appreciate it. You all have been watching Badass Lady Folk. I'm your host, Christine Stoddard. This episode's guest was Queerly Femtastic. Watch next time.